Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and Rusty is back on the show. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you, Doug?
I'm awesome. And you were on the show a few weeks ago and we talked about not working as much. And this episode is going to be called How to Stop Working and Start Living. We're going to go over some quiet quitting tips in a general sense. And it was spawned from the episode that I guess told people how to optimize the last couple of years before retiring. A big chunk of that episode was just doing less work. Both you and I excelled at that. Some people had a really rough time grappling with that. And I know people now who just, I mean, they want to do the best job that they can. And I don't know, I struggle with that. I think it could be too much and it could be like misdirected effort, but I'm a lazy person. So I'm a little bit odd in that way. So I know that you got several emails and you got a lot of feedback from people kind of specifically around this. Is quiet quitting an okay thing to describe it?
It's okay. Quiet quitting specifically. And then, you know, I just talked about the concept. I was thinking more of just talking about the concept of quiet quitting and kind of putting forward an argument for it when we recorded that last episode. But people really wanted to know specific strategies for quiet quitting. And I talked a little bit about it on the last episode, but I was like, I was actually pretty excited that people were actually interested in that topic, especially knowing this is one of the top like career podcasts on Apple Podcasts.
Bananas.
And if you go look at the other podcasts in that category, there it's like how to get ahead at work and and you know, like grind your way to success. And then there, I'm glad that there's another podcast in that space, this podcast that's like, here's how to do less at work and here are the specific strategies. So,
and it's absolutely mind-blowing. And I want to talk about that, the general idea. I'm glad people are excited to hear about it. And the funny thing, just the context, if you go to Apple Podcasts, which for this show, it's the biggest platform that people listen. Basically, if you go to Apple Podcasts, go to like business and then careers, you'll see an area for like top podcast. There's only about 50 of them listed in there. And this show where I'm roughly anti-career is one of the top ones, which does explain why I get a very large amount of emails of people that want to be on the show. Mm. Yeah. One funny thing, I'm a project manager. I have a PMP and the Project Management Institute is another podcast. It's actually ranked lower than this.
Okay.
And that's like the whole fucking organization, right? So it's hilarious. And I'm like, I should do a little bit more with it and tell more people about it, but it's more just amusing.
I think the other people in the category who have these shows, they're like going around to corporations and corporations are like hiring them to come in and give talks at their. And I was like, how funny would that be if someone brought like you in to be like, here are strategies for quiet quitting, or here's how to save up your money so you can stop working at your job that's making you miserable.
Yeah. Fun topic. Yeah. Fun topic. So we got an email, both Rusty and I got an email from someone named Brian in the audience. And he wrote a somewhat of a lengthy email. We're going to try to summarize it. We'll tag team it and make sure that we hit the main points here. But the main idea is he loves the show. He thinks it's fantastic. So number one.
And that's so why. He's awesome.
Yeah. He has great taste.
If you want us to talk about your email on air, that's a good strategy. Yeah.
Main ideas here. He plans to retire from his current career in the summer of 2029. So about 3 years from now, right?
Oh, yeah. Three. Yep.
He'll be 51 years old. And will be Coast Fi at a minimum, maybe Full Fi, depending on bonuses and market performance, and obviously a handful of other details outside of his control. Interesting thing is he was promoted to like senior management, like a senior director kind of thing. And he sees that as like validation by the company that he is doing a good job. He thinks he's bringing value, and he's wondering if he actually should be doing as much work because he hears role models like you and I, Rusty, talking about spending time on other areas, specifically around health. So he has some questions around health. And with this, I'll kick it over to you, Rusty, to talk about some of the things that he may have the opportunity to do, especially with the promotion.
Yeah. And we'll clarify, or I'll clarify too, that Brian is not his real name. We're keeping him somewhat anonymous. And he also said that with his most recent promotion, he's getting his own personal office. So he's like, oh, that seems like it would open up some opportunities to maybe be a little bit more active during the day or slack off more too. So I think kind of setting the stage for the whole discussion, I think taking back a little bit of your personal time during the work day is key in an office job setting, at least, you know, like you and I and Brian had. I think some people categorize that a little bit as like stealing company time. But if you flip that, the employers in the past 20 years, especially since the advent of smartphones, have figured out a lot of ways to steal personal time from their employees. And so I think figuring out some way to carve out a little bit of time so that you can have your own life is really, really critical and key. You mentioned the emails that I received. I did receive one negative email that said basically that like doing things on company time is theft. It was from an attorney. So I actually did do the legal research, and it is not theft for salaried employees. And in fact, the way that came up in the cases was employers tried to dock their salaried employees' pay because they were displeased with either the quantity or the quality of the work that they were doing. And the courts were like, sorry, you can't do that. If you put someone on salary, you get their output and that's what you get. And if you don't like it, you can fire them. But you can't just be like, hey, you're 80% of good as an employee as we were anticipating, so we're going to take 20% of your pay away. So just to clarify for anyone out who's worried out there that this is theft, the courts at least have found that it is not. I just feel like if you just even think of that common sense view of, you know, it's not theft for your employer to email you outside of work hours. It's not theft for you to go on a walk or, you know, do some of these other strategies mm-hmm. that we're gonna discuss during the workday. So yeah, I think the other piece of this that's kind of interesting is that people real hard time getting into this mindset that it's like okay to attend to a personal matter during 9 to 5 on Monday through Friday. And it's just, man, there are certain personal matters you absolutely need to have the space for to do that. Scheduling doctor's appointments, dentist appointments. I think we're going to talk about all that stuff. But I mean, when I was working, I would just hear things from people. They were just so head down, totally in the work mindset. And I, you know, they'd just be having casual conversations with me. These are my peers and friends. And I'd say things like, oh man, I love it when I get to work from home. Like, you know, I can start a cooking project. I can get my laundry done. I can, if I have a little bit of break during the day, I might go grocery shopping, and it just frees up a lot of the time after work and on the weekends to do actual like fun stuff, not just do the bare minimum that I need to you know, keep my life running. I said that to one person and they just were like, no, that's ludicrous. You know, you have to be in the office. I find it so relaxing to come into work. I like my commute. I listen to my podcasts, and I'm just like, you can listen to podcasts at home. Like you don't have to have a commute to do that. So, I said that was an example of someone I think who struggled to even just like entertain this idea. Right. And then I had another colleague who said, we were having a conversation. They said, like, in an ideal world, I'd reliably have one day off per week. And my response was, or maybe two. That's what a weekend is. And to their credit, they did go, oh yeah, I guess in an ideal world, I could have as many days off a week as I wanted. Yeah. So,
man, it's so interesting, especially when you're in the culture of a company like that, where everyone's working all the time, and you're like, well, it is kind of normal just to work one day over the weekend or put in an extra 6 hours, or some places, obviously, you end up doing that like both weekend days. And when it's happening all around you, it seems pretty normal. But now, like on the other side, I see how damaging that is to like have that as the normal culture, which I mean, yeah, that's what happens. Like the, whatever the boss like works all weekend. So everyone thinks that they're supposed to do it, even though maybe the boss, this is dumb by the way, but even though the boss is like, well, no, you guys should not do this, you know, even though I'm doing it. But obviously that ends up setting the stage for the whole culture of the company or the team or whatever it is. So.
Yeah. Or I'd get emails. They'd be like, you could see the boss was trying to like restrain themselves. They'd be like, hey, I don't expect a reply to this email over the weekend. I just am sending it now because I'm working and I just wanted to put this on your radar screen in case you wanted to work on it over the weekend. But I don't expect a reply until Monday or whatever it is. But I'm just like, I guess that's better than I need a response immediately, but it's especially like on a Sunday afternoon or whatever. It's like, don't send me that. I already have the Sunday scaries. I already have enough anxiety going on. Don't put me into work mode, but it's still, that's a boss trying to be humane, but it's actually a very inhumane world to be in or frame of mind to be in.
I'll jump to a specific tip. This is way more common now, but I remember when we got the feature in Outlook to be able to delay delivery and send at a scheduled time because some other assholes that I worked with, no one personally, but some assholes that I worked with, they would be like sending emails at whatever, 1 a.m. over the weekends and stuff. And I was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Come on. So I would like draft my emails at whatever, 2 p.m. to go out late. Mm-hmm. Just so it looked like I was working later and you could sprinkle it, whatever, through the evening. So just a little tip if you are trying to play along with the game. Yeah. So it was kind of fun.
Doug is so dedicated. He's like working at 1 till 1 a.m. every night.
And this may not be a problem. Again, this is just a silly, not really a tip, but it may not be an issue these days, but back in the day, we had like the messenger apps, right?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right. So instant messaging, it's Slack, it's whatever it is, Teams.
They're just different apps, but it's the same principle. Yeah.
And it can see if you're at the computer, it's like idle or not idle, right? Yeah. So I very quickly downloaded a auto mouse mover app. So it would just like move 1 pixel every 2 seconds or whatever, it would look like you're not idle.
That's actually probably a better strategy than what I figured out how to. I found them so distracting. I wanted nothing to do with them, and so I figured out how to like totally delete the app from my work laptop. Yeah. But then they would push updates onto you, and it would be like the firmware updates, and then my computers would crash like every year my laptop would crash because it'd be trying to push updates to a program that wasn't there. I'm pretty sure that was the cause, at least.
They're like, but oh,
I was like this is so, the one we had was called Jabber, which is just like it's already like implying that this is just nonsense that's going on in there, and I found it so distracting. I thought email alone was already super distracting. And so I figured out how to just like disable it. And I was like, I was actually probably a much better employee from figuring out how to disable that app than, you know, otherwise would be. But I'm sure in some ways it was viewed as a thing, especially when I figured out they could keep track of when I was logged on and not. So I think at any given time it was like, Rusty has not logged on for 3 months.
But that's awesome. Yeah. And probably these days they would be like, oh, you can't load the auto mouse mover app onto your computer, obviously. So I would
figure it out.
I would just get an oscillating fan and like whatever, wrap the thing around so it just moves back and forth. So it's super easy to solve those problems. It's a little game.
Right.
To play.
No, that's how I felt. I totally felt like it was a game. I was like, I am going to use my intelligence to figure out how to get this app off of my computer. So,
back to Brian. So he will have an office. It's a 40-hour work week, and he's thinking that he wants to sort of trim down and put in a little bit less time, maybe closer to 32. And it sounds like he wants to work on himself specifically thinking about health. So he talks about potentially using resistance bands, weights, meditation, stretching, and he thinks he will have tons of different options just being able to close the door during the day, which is, it's pretty awesome. I mean, I was going to say when I worked in an office, I never had my own private office, but I worked at home for half my career or something like that. Mm-hmm. Either that, or I did have a cube at a big, nice office building. The rest of the floor is like fucking empty. Like no one else would come in. Yep. So I would just go in and basically have like the whole floor with like a really beautiful view of the Atlanta skyline or whatever. It was weird.
Would you have an assigned desk, or would it just like hotel, I guess is what they call it sometimes, where you have to like check one out for the day?
Usually a desk, typically an assigned desk.
Oh, you had an assigned desk. Yep.
Nice. So, and then you had an office, right?
Yeah. At the law firm, I guess in New York, it's more common for people to like share with like one or two other attorneys. But in Chicago, the culture is pretty much every attorney gets their own office from day one. I mean, it makes sense because you're discussing privileged and confidential information on pretty much a daily basis. So you don't want other people overhearing that. Or if you are going to have other people, and you got to make sure they're within the same zone of privilege that you are. So I actually got a good amount of experience having my own office. So I developed some strategies. One was I kept a yoga mat in my office at all times. I guess backing up, thinking about health more broadly, I wouldn't say I ever like tried to get super jacked in the office. Like I wasn't trying to increase my weight on power lifts or anything like that. But I guess my general outlook was I can do certain things to make myself less stressed, more calm, and to like combat the effect of sitting for so long all day. And I didn't like, I know a lot of people use the standing desk to try to do that. And I didn't like that. And I found that actually not having the standing desk, I was not liking to sit for very long, it forced me to actually get up and move, which I actually found was more valuable. So yeah, I would do naps occasionally then too on the yoga mat. So, and I do think all that stuff too, and I think it's will apply to a lot of the things we talk about. I think it actually increased my productivity overall, especially, you know, if you're really dragging, taking a nap for 20 minutes really resets your brain and makes you feel a lot fresher. It's much better than just continue to stare at the screen and trying to force your way through it. So there's a little bit of an irony there where it's like taking a nap in the middle of the day. It sounds like you're doing less, but you're actually probably driving more results.
Brian was, I guess, you know, he's looking for some tips. So we're going to give him some stuff, but he also mentions, could I realistically spend about an hour and a half or two per day in the office working on my own personal goals and development? Could I do that and not feel like a jackass to my peers and manager and the majority of the people that I actually, you know, like at the company? He says they're a relatively small company, and obviously it means his interactions and what people see has a greater impact. And I think that's one thing that, you know, I don't emphasize a ton. The companies that I worked for were very big, and I got lost in the middle manager shuffle, which I thrived in because of all the reasons that we're talking about. But I can appreciate the fact that if it's a smaller company, that it impacts people directly. And there's an owner of the company. I get that. And you worked at a big law firm. So those are more faceless, heartless, and they don't really care about the individual employees so much. So any other disclaimers that you can think of in this area?
I guess, are you saying that maybe he might feel potentially guilty about slacking off? Yeah, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He might feel that. And then he also mentions, he's like, can I do that and not feel like a jackass?
Oh, so okay.
We have to thread the needle. And I think we have some great tips to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the mindset, I mean, just walking around my office, seeing what other people were doing, it was about 50-50. I would go into someone else's office and they would be like reading some news website, or which I don't think was because they were doing legal research on a related topic for work, or online shopping, or people would occasionally be watching YouTube or watching Netflix. I think it's actually fairly common for, if people have a 40-hour a week job, I think it's fairly common for them to spend a few minutes, you know, on their phone, on social media, or doing any of the things that I just listed. So actually being intentional about how you use that time, like if you're using it for your health, if you're using it for to de-stress, if you're using it to do something really intentional that will make you a healthier, happier person, I think that's actually a better way of doing it than to just like mindlessly zone out and get sucked into a doom scroll or something like that. So I would actually say being intentional about how you're using that time actually is like a sign of being a better employee. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who literally never allow themselves a single distraction while they're at work. And Brian might be thinking that everyone at his company is in that boat. But from just what even I observed walking around one of this like type A overachiever culture offices, even in that environment, people were doing things that were probably not technically work a good portion of the day. So I would encourage him to not feel too guilty about doing that. And I think they've even done studies too, where it's like, you're only really productive for about like 3 or 4 hours of the day. So if you're in the office 8 hours a day, you're probably not being at least at full maximum productivity that whole time. So
yeah.
How productive would you estimate people are at work?
Yeah, I think it is probably, that 3 to 4 hours or so, depending on, I think that's kind of the capacity.
Yep.
And of course, there's other stuff that you could do, like maybe more admin type stuff or replying to emails, but like true, like mental, like power and actually putting that effort in, it can't be more than like 3 or 4 hours. And if you think that and you think you're special, like you're probably not, like, honestly, you're probably not. You might be able to do it like 1 or 2 days if you have to, but you certainly can't do it day in and day out. So because, I mean, you've probably, even you got to pull an all-nighter kind of thing and you really have to do it, then I get it.
Right.
You can do a little more.
No, you can, if you're really up against a deadline, like you would really be up against deadlines and litigation. And yeah, I could work for like 24 hours straight and really push, but then I'd try to, there'd be times where I didn't have any deadline like that looming over me. And I'd try to be like, oh, it'd be great to get 12 hours in today because whatever, I've got the time, don't have anything else planned. It'd be nice to crank out some hours. You know, they all add up towards your hours at the end of the year, which is how your bonus is determined at the law firm. So I would try to do that and I just couldn't do it. But if there was that deadline looming, I think you can force it, but that's not a fun state to be living in like that.
And I think age certainly makes a difference. I think I'm older now than I was before, as we all are. And
it's true every day.
I think I had more energy in my 20s and I wanted to do more and I like could, maybe I rested better and I was able to just have more energy the next day and do that a little bit more. I'm not really sure, but I'm definitely more tired now in my late 40s. So I'm like, yeah, I don't know you're what I would
mid.
Think now.
You can still claim mid 40s, Doug.
Thanks. Yeah. It's right on the edge there, but I'm not in my early 40s like you.
So yeah.
The thing is,
that's,
I think
so great.
the people that are younger probably have more capacity to do like more work. But all that said, I do remember one of my like mentor advisors in the consulting world. He was a really good guy, but he was like, oh man, you know, I've been doing 80, 100 hour weeks for the last few months or whatever, and he was totally burned out. He wasn't seeing his kids. And at that point I was like, there's no fucking way I'm following it. This is a horrible mentor. Like I'm learning from him, but only what not to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I was just like, what are you doing? Because there's no fucking way you're working 80 or 100 hours a week. He was basically like sitting on calls all the time, multiple calls, like in the car as he was walking. I'm like, that's not working. You're just wasting your fucking time thinking that you're kind of getting something done. But really, if you weren't there, it wouldn't matter anyway.
Yep.
So yeah. Very nihilistic.
Well, I'm at that point too, where I mean, there's no employment job that could get that level of commitment out of me anymore. But I mean, in terms of having the energy, we just had the baby, so I needed to pull all-nighters or, be up all night. And it's very stressful level of commitment too. Cause you have this little creature crying and you love it more than anything in the world too. And it's in distress. So it's probably even like a little bit more stressful than work. And the hours are super insane. And I was like, oh, I have the energy to do this, but it's only for something like that, where it's like, I want to do it. It's aligned with my values, and now earning more money or helping a stock price tick up or whatever you would be doing at a job is just that doesn't motivate me at all anymore. So,
good point. Yeah. So even
It's like if Elizabeth was in the hospital, I'm sure you'd be totally
right.
Dialed in, and you'd be like, I can stay up all night as long as I need to, or do whatever I need to do to take care of her. But you're not going to be replying to someone's BS email about doing the 10th revision to a PowerPoint presentation or whatever the crap was the management consultants do.
It's like, maybe we should change the color back to what it was. Like that's the kind of stuff you run into.
Can you do this for me ASAP at 3 a.m. in the morning?
Yeah. It's so important. The color thing is, that's real. It's like you just switch the color back and forth. Like maybe we should just, Okay. Let's get into some of the tips here. And we have kind of two sections, and I'll credit you, Rusty, because you created the outline for this basically. So leadership and management strategies, and we'll kind of blend this, there's a couple key areas, and then we'll blend it into some other quiet quitting ideas if we haven't burned all of the ones that we have as we got to this point. And then we'll talk about the health and wellness stuff, which should be interesting. So you want to kick it off on the leadership, and there's a few here, so you could pick the one that you think is probably the top priority.
Yeah, I think probably the highest level one would be the strategic delegation. And I think that's one that both you and I, from our previous conversations on air and off, both really embraced. And I actually felt really good about that too, because I was like, hey, I'm not trying to advance my career anymore. The people who work for me are, I can give them the opportunities that someone in my position would normally take away from them. So if they did the research on something, I would weigh in and help them polish it, refine it, or whatever. But I'd always let them be the ones to send out the email to the higher up leadership, or even to send communications to the client. And especially no one at my level would have given away an opportunity like that to be like, this is rusty work product coming out. And but then the people I worked for, they loved getting those opportunities, especially, the real junior ones. They're like, you're going to let me email the client? And I'm like, yeah, you got it. That's what you got to do as an attorney. And I had one woman working for me at the very end who was a first year, and the feedback she gave me, and I was on a case where we were doing like over 100 witness interviews, and I was like, I'll go with you, but you are going to take the lead on all these. You can interview all the witnesses, take the notes, type up everything. I'll be there to make sure you don't get into too much trouble. But I've done hundreds of witness interviews at this point in my career. They're not very entertaining for me. And normally a first year wouldn't get to do that sort of thing. So, but she told me at the end, she was like, I think you're the only person in the whole law firm who's actually like training a first year associate.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's probably actually pretty accurate. Because I remember what it was like as a first year, where they're just sending you like research tasks to do research projects. And they're not even telling you what you're doing it for, the broader context of the case. They're just like, I need a case that says X. And then you go find a case that says X, and they're like, thanks. And that's only feedback, feedback that you get. So,
and great parallels, even different industries, but exactly the same. And I was looking as I was trying to move up in my career and get promoted and that sort of thing for these opportunities. So I would like try to take something from my boss, be like, hey, I'll take this off your plate. Will it make it easier? Can I please create these presentations and give these presentations? And, you know, they're hesitant, you know, because they don't want to give that up either. But over time, like I ticked away and I owned a lot of stuff. And basically I had a situation where I could delegate to people that were very qualified. I may have mentioned it in another episode, but one of the fun tactics that companies have, they'll lay off a bunch of people and then hire them as contractors, sometimes through a third party consulting company, like the one that I worked for. So I ended up being the boss and like interviewing people that were like 20 years older than me that had like 10 or had like all that experience over me. Obviously they could do this stuff. So I've been like, do you want to own this meeting now?
Right.
Like I'll transition it. Maybe I would have them cover over a vacation or something like that. And I'm like, you know how to do it now. Great. Do you want to own this thing? So I was getting rid of a lot of stuff and basically things ran smoothly because like they were all qualified to do it. The other fun part, like you said, the junior employees that like wanted to get promoted and stuff, they wanted to take over. They were looking for opportunities. So I'm like, hey, would you like to, and they absolutely would want to jump on whatever task it was. There were very few things that I actually had to do. I think it was maybe like 2 meetings per week and I kept those. But I mean, obviously when I was out for vacation, which I took often, someone would cover for me. So it's not like I had to do it, but it somewhat justified me being there.
Yeah.
You mentioned,
you have to maintain some, you could maybe delegate away everything, but there's a certain level of responsibility, like of actual showing up, being visible, like appearing to be doing work that needs to be going on for sure. Yeah. What? I guess my wife was really good about the delegation piece, especially the last couple of years working. And I think her team just like freaking loved it. And they had upward feedback at the organization she was at. And she had like, I think I might be wrong, but like 15-ish people, maybe more than that on her team that was reporting up to her. And her upward feedback was just like off the charts. Like I think it was 15 percentage points higher than like the next highest manager on the team. And it's like, these are, you know, she worked at a Fortune 100 company and it's like, they're hiring bright, super talented, eager people. And it turns out that if you just let them, if you give them more work and let them do more, they're like really happy. So that's the perfect situation where it's like, she's managing them, giving them good opportunities. They're loving work and like loving her as a manager, and the company's probably getting as good of output. I mean, they're, especially if it's, my wife isn't capable of doing as much work as 15 people. So it's much better to have 15 people working productively than to have just my wife working at maximum capacity, you know?
Totally. So. It's so interesting that people will want to take on the extra stuff because you're like, oh, you know, they're doing their thing. But it's obvious when you think about it, like you said, it's qualified people that are trying to get promoted. They want to get raises and all that stuff. So you may as well like let them step up. Some people may not be into it.
Right.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But there are other people that are, like want to take over your job. So like if you can give it to them, give them as much as you can.
No. Yeah. You think of the average first year, you know, whatever consultant at Accenture, like that's someone who's normally pretty type A, pretty driven, you know, at the law firms I was at too. It's like, who are we hiring? We're hiring the people with the best grades from the best law schools. Like, yeah, they're used to working a lot, you know, they're wanting to work a lot. So you can give them a lot of runway, let them run with it. And then, yeah, the irony is by you doing less, it's actually creating more value.
One kind of related area, it's not about getting rid of work, but this might help Brian feel better about not doing as much and delegating as much as he can, which I think you should delegate as much as you possibly can, even to the point, I mean, it should feel uncomfortable. Like it should feel off because you've gotten to your career or you've gotten to where you are in your career by doing so much and overachieving and all that stuff. So got to let that go a little bit. But one thing that I continued to do really well was solve major issues, which isn't the most fun thing to do because basically it would be like someone else's project and they're like, Doug, we're having this issue. Can you like solve it? So usually you just had to get the right people that could make decisions and approve things to talk to each other and then little negotiation and then it's okay. But at some lower level, like they can't actually negotiate and they're just at a stalemate. And I was able to focus really well. Like to your point, I wasn't the fastest to get back to all emails, only the important ones. So I had a good way of like prioritizing and like filtering BS. All that to say, when they were like, hey, can you solve this problem? I'm like, okay, like who are the contacts and can I drop everything else? So this is the only thing that I'm doing. So I'm like just escalating until I get to a person who's like, oh yeah, I could fix that in like 1 second. Yep. So that said, the one thing I was good at is solving like problems that got out of control. So I did that really well. And I think Brian, if you have your thing that you can do really well, keep doing that one. If you are the problem solver, then keep solving like the hardest problems. Probably train someone else to do it. Like, I just summarized exactly what I would do. Just like keep escalating until someone can solve the problem or it's not a big enough problem and it actually doesn't matter. Yep. And then you figure that out too. So anyway, keep doing the thing that you know how to do best.
Yeah. And that's where you're adding the most value too, right? I mean, if you're coming in and fixing the clog in the pipeline, the part where people are getting stuck, that's unique value add. And you're also finding those areas more if you're letting other people do the stuff that you doing stuff that you already know how to do, those areas will eventually get escalated to you. Yeah.
Before we move on from the strategic delegation area, the other advantage by delegating and not doing as much work is it separates you from your identity that a lot of people are tied to with their job. So by the time I got laid off, which is another key thing, I got laid off. So keep that in mind when I give you advice.
Yeah, like that's sheepish about that. I thought we just had an episode talking about the benefits of getting laid off. So
yeah. It worked out great for me because I wouldn't have had the balls enough to quit most likely.
Yeah.
But overall, it does separate you from like that role, the identity that you have. And it probably, hopefully, will make it a little easier when you do stop working because you haven't been doing all that stuff. You see other people have taken it over and they're doing a great job and thriving and you can do other stuff instead.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's key. I was talking to a friend who he's reached his FI number. He's like, basically, like, that's my whole goal in life for the past 10 years was just getting to the FI number. He's like, but now I'm having trouble quitting because I don't think the company will be able to like backfill me or whatever. And I'm like, well, just have a conversation with them. And I don't know. I think part of it is he's having trouble separating from that identity of like, this is who I am. I'm the software engineer for this company. I've been with them since the beginning. There are other people, there's no one else at the company who knows to do what I know how to do. But by the same token, I'm like, well, you're not really doing the company a service if you're holding on to that identity, because you need to, at some point, someone else is going to need to do this or the company's going to fail.
Right.
You know, you give them a year heads up. And the other thing, and this is, I guess, how I felt in my situation too. I'm like, I'm happy to train anyone on any of the cases that I'm on, get them up to speed, things like that. If the company doesn't want to, or the law firm that I was working for doesn't want to take me up on that, that's on them. That's their bad management. They're not taking into account succession planning very well. And especially at a law firm where there's such high turnover, that's really bad management to not constantly be thinking like, what happens if this person leaves and things like that. So that's such a high, like above my pay grade or above like pretty much anyone's pay grade. It's an issue that needs to really be addressed company-wide.
Yeah. And I don't think I know the person that you're talking about, but yeah, whenever I hear people that think that they're that important, it makes me think they're not super self-aware. Or, I mean,
this guy, yeah, this guy's at, he's like employee number three at a software company. So I think he legitimately understands the software to, from what he was saying, like he understands the software to a point that no one else in the company does. But I'm also like, I think if you gave him a year, if you're like, hire two engineers to backfill me and I'll train them for a year, I think they could get to that. I mean, that's, I don't know all the ins and outs, but
surely some people are as critical as they think they are, but probably hardly any.
Any. I was like, that was, I was like, you have a better argument than most, but also this is, this is, it's still something that needs to be addressed in the company. Cause otherwise, like if you get sick or get hit by a bus, like the company's going to, the whole company's going to fail. And that's not, you're not doing your company a service in that case either. So,
All right. Anything else with the delegation portion that we should cover?
No, I think that's, I guess there's, hold on. I'll back up. I guess this is related. It kind of goes along similar lines, but I think it's just like treating your, the people who are working for you well. And so I think just finding little ways to do that. One was when I'd have check-in meetings with more junior people or people who are reporting to me, I would suggest that we go for a walk, or I'd say like, oh, let's go out and get a healthy lunch. I'll pay for it. And we can pick a place that's a little bit distance away so that we get, you know, we get a walk in along the way too. Or just being like, hey, we need to touch base for an hour. Let's go do it outside as opposed to being inside. So especially for those more casual meetings, with people who are more in your direct line reporting up to you, I think you can use your position of whatever authority to actually benefit both of you, kind of forcing them to get outside and or be a little bit more active too.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think, well, it's great if you could work the idea of like meetings outside, walking or whatever. Perfect. Yeah. I would go on a lot of walks myself. It sounds like you were like, I got to get up from my desk. So you would do that. And depending on where I was and the climate and if there's snow on the ground or whatever, it wasn't great to walk outside, but there were a few areas that had like really beautiful campuses. And like, to your point, I'd like walk across the campus to get coffee from like the, whatever the kiosk that was much farther away, just so I could like walk around. I mean, it was like a beautiful, it almost looked like a college campus quad or something like that, where I'm like, this is awesome here.
Yeah.
And then it, it was one of those projects where no one else was there. I don't even know why they flew me out there, because I wasn't meeting with anyone, but I was supposed to be there. So it was one of those where I was working like 10 to 3 or something and then hit the gym for a few hours and great per diem. It was, weird stuff. Weird wasting money.
That's a great situation, honestly, because it's
it was awesome.
Yeah, you're around other people, but none of them are like even somewhat aware of what your schedule is supposed to be. So that's, and they're definitely not like filling out evaluations for you or whatever at the end of the year. So
Super interesting.
Along similar lines, when I was, I mean, whatever, we're going on tangents, but when I was, whenever I'd be like going on a work trip to travel, if it was someplace I wanted to go, I would add on a day. I'd fly out like a day early or come back a day late. So I'd go to New York City fairly often, and I'd always add 24 hours onto the trip, and I'd go to like a Michelin starred restaurant. Yeah. There was one, it was Le Bernardin. It was in the office, same office building as my law firm, and it was one of the top 50 ranked restaurants in the world. Nice. And they had a bar, and I'd go like sit at the bar and order my nice meal, and I'd be like, this is my extra bonus day in New York City. And especially if you do it after whatever meetings or depositions, whatever was, you know, bringing me out there, it's normally pretty relaxed at that point, because you've had a big crunch, you have the meeting or event happen, and then it's like, oh well, I actually don't have too much to tend to for the next day, and I could try to steal an extra day. My wife had more exotic trips than me. She went to Tokyo and she took 5 extra days on that trip. And then she went to Delhi, India, and did, I think, like, another 4 or 5, just like, but as long as, if you're taking that amount of travel time, you might as well get your
totally
your greatly reduced cost vacation in. So,
and yeah, similar. I think we would call it like flex travel. I can't quite remember, but anyway, we would often fly out on, say, Monday to Thursday. But yeah, say you're in New York. So I was on one of my first projects was in New York. We were working on Long Island, some stuff out in the Hamptons. It was before the season, but yeah, a buddy and I stayed out and we didn't go to a super nice restaurant, but it was a fun Mexican restaurant. And yeah. I think I laughed harder at that. Like margaritas were coming out of my nose. Like I don't even know what we were talking about, but it was, yeah, super fun. And to your point, the project actually didn't care. It may have actually been cheaper because we didn't fly back and to our respective home cities. We just shared a hotel room because we were buddies. So that was actually cheaper, a few hundred bucks versus like whatever $1,000 to fly us to and from one more time. Yep. So from the project perspective, we were saving money.
Yeah.
Kind of funny. And so I would take tons of trips like that. Yeah. Just like long weekends or stay where we were at or whatever.
Yeah. There was a period. I mean, I know that's one of the benefits of the consulting, right? Is that like you get so many miles and, you know, you basically don't even have to worry about paying for airfare ever if you are just somewhat intentional or strategic about how you use that benefit. But yeah, we had a similar situation with my wife being at the airline where we could fly anywhere as long as there was space available on the plane. So nice. Yeah, the weekends, especially when I was starting out, the first like maybe year and a half where I wasn't like in full on work mode, working weekends all the time, we would just fly. We'd even fly internationally just for the weekend. So
yeah,
it was good. That's awesome. Look back on that, I'm like, oh, there are definitely phases where I gave too much of my life's energy to work, but I'm like, at least when there were times where I wasn't so busy at work, it was nice to carve out and do something big like that for ourselves.
All right. As I'm looking at the time, I see we'll need to hustle up on a couple of these items. But one of the other items you noted was having firm boundaries. And I think it sounds like Brian is pretty set and it sounds like a decent balance and he's not putting in crazy weekends or anything like that. However, maybe other people could take a tip around setting boundaries, maybe like weekend specific hours where they're going to work and maybe not check their emails on other hours. Did you do anything specific like that?
So I was so bad at setting boundaries when I first started working. And as soon as I got busy, I was just like, oh, if there's work to do, I need to be working. I can essentially never relax. And I even talked to one of my colleagues. It was a very memorable conversation because I talked to him about how I was in this dilemma, and his take on it was, I think it's unethical to take any personal time if there's work you could be doing, which, you know, is not the actual standard for professional ethics as an attorney. And that guy is actually, he's very successful. He's an attorney general for a fairly large state. So, you know, that's the sort of mind, I guess, you know, that mindset got him places.
Yeah.
But I was like, dude, that's like, you're going to have a heart attack when you're 40. That's not a sustainable way to live life. Even with that professional success, I doubt that his personal life is maybe as rewarding as he wants it to be. If that's his standard, still his standard, I guess. But I always took vacation and took like a good amount of vacation by law firm standards, which would mean like I try to always do two vacations a year that were like 1 week long. And I know Carla was on a recent episode and she said she just didn't take vacations at all for 10 years. And our friend Steve in Boulder told me he just stopped taking vacations because it's like you have to work so hard to clear the space and then you take the vacation and you come back and there's so much more work waiting for you. And it's just more stressful to take the vacation than not. So I would at least take the 2 1-week vacations a year. And it was like a big point of contention at the law firm. One of my bosses tried to coach me one time. She's like, okay, what I do when I'm on vacation is I work until noon and then I have the rest of the day vacation. It's really nice and relaxing. And I told her what I do when I'm on vacation is not work at all. And it's fucking awesome. Didn't say fucking, but you know, that in my mind, I was like, I don't work at all. And it's way better than spending half the day working. But so about 2 years out, I was like, all right, I'm taking 4 weeks of vacation every year. That was when I was like way past my shit index with work. And I was like, and I'm not working any weekends. I'm just going to quietly not work on the weekends. There was a few points too where people were like, hey, can you just take a look at this real quick? And I just like, I wouldn't even reply if it came in on the weekend. A lot of the stuff was just like, can you find this document? I'm working on this brief. Can you find this document for me? And in my mind, I was like, that document's exactly where it's supposed to be on the server. I've filed it correctly. I'm not going to take 5 minutes out of my weekend to do that. The old me, I mean, my wife even remembers, like, we'd be on vacation. We'd be like at the beach and I'd be like in the car trying to find the document that some other attorney needed to draft something. And then, at the end I was like, oh, I'm not doing that at all. Like, and then people would be like, hey, you didn't, you know, I'd get some pushback. They'd be like, you didn't reply. I'd be like, sorry. I was like out on a walk or something. Yeah. You know, I'd say something honestly, like what I was doing, but I would just not do that. My wife had a harder time with that. And she came up with a really good strategy, which was she would just leave her phone at home on a Saturday or a Sunday. And then we'd go out and do something. And she just wouldn't even have her phone with her. So that was her way of actually like forcing herself to enforce that boundary. And then, and then I just would take my vacation time. I would, if I was sick, I would take a sick day and I wouldn't work. I hadn't done that. I'd be like, like take a sick day and be like, well, there's still something I could be doing. And it's like, sick days are benefits that you are are negotiated. They're guaranteed by law. And then they're also negotiated in your employment contract. Same with vacation days. You also have protected family medical leave. Your employer might not need to pay. The legal part of that is like your employer may not need to pay you. But if they're, you might have it in your contract that you get paid for your medical leave too. So those are negotiated benefits. It drives me insane. Like I think about myself, I'm mad at myself for not taking those benefits, especially a sick day when I'm sick. But it makes me really mad on a societal level to think of just like all the benefits that people throw away over the course of the year. It's not like you think about the analogy with money. It's not like you'd be like, well, you guys paid me $100,000, but I only live off $70,000. So I'm just going to give you $30,000 back. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I don't need it. I don't need it. I'm fine. I can cover my expenses without.
So crazy.
Yeah. But that's what people do with their vacation and their sick days. Yeah.
And I think, I was definitely one to sort of bank up vacation days. So often I would have like sort of be at the capacity that I can't carry anymore, but I would use what I needed to so I could continue to accumulate. That said, I often did the flex hour thing and I don't have a lot of the guilt that other people apparently have. So if I was like doing extra work after hours, I would comp that later. And I'm like, all right, I'm getting up later. I'm going to go to the gym during this window. So I kind of I trued it up mentally and there was no like check to anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of bullshit math. But all that said, one thing I did when we were doing some slow travel, maybe back in 2014, we were in Austin, we rented a house. This was kind of as we were testing, like moving and all that stuff. I was like, this is great. Tons of barbecue. I was like getting brisket and like beef sausage everywhere. My cholesterol shot through the roof. But I was like, you know what? I'm taking every Friday off. And my boss was like, well, I'm not really sure. I'm like, well, you guys have mandatory, like we have to use the vacation day. So I'm taking the Fridays off for the next. She was like, it might look bad for the client. But I took the fucking days off because they were like, you're direct. I mean, they told us we had to take days off. And I could choose. And just because they were like, well, I don't know if that's really a good look. Like, they don't even fucking know I'm gone, really.
Right.
So anyway, like I said, I don't think I have the same guilt. And I don't know, it runs deep for me. Early on as I was going through college, as I saw what it was going to be like working, I was like, oh, I'm going to make this take longer. So instead of taking like the maximum hours, and I was already doing a co-op program, so it was going to take me 5+ years to get through college, but I like stopped taking like 15 or 16 hours and I would take the minimum. I would take 12 to just extend the whole runway. I just have a bad attitude.
That stuff that your boss did, it pisses me off so much. I mean, that's just what the company is saying too, is like, we don't want to have to buy back your vacation time at the end of the year. I don't know if that was the situation that you were in.
It was an accounting thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And he's like, well, can't you just not, you know, claim that you took the vacation time, but keep working? That way we don't have to pay you for your vacation time at the end of the year. It's like, That stuff is really taking people advantage of people's naivete, right. Especially when you're doing it to like younger people too. Yeah. Like, I don't know if that was, it sounds like maybe that was a little later in your career, the Austin phase, but I don't know. I find that pretty frustrating. The other thing is, I've talked about it on here before, but this is why a lot of companies switch back to the unlimited vacation time is so that they wouldn't have to buy back vacation time when people left anymore. And that is just like so effing manipulative, because if you give them the unlimited vacation time, but then also guilt them into never taking vacation, which is what the situation was at the law firm, I was like, all you've done is you've taken away this benefit that people get where you buy back their vacation time at the end of the year if they don't use it. So
not cool. Although I would have absolutely crushed unlimited vacation time. They would have been like, well, this guy is a real asshole.
That's because the one guy who accused me of theft, I was like, my company had unlimited vacation time. I was like, I was taking unlimited vacation, that, you know, because I said on the previous episode, I only did like 10 hours of work over my last 6 months of work. So, and I was taking my unlimited vacation time.
Before we move to the health and wellness, and we'll quick hit that because there's pizza calling my name out there somewhere. There's a slice. So part of it is like our great upbringings where we're like, we have a strong work ethic. We want to work. We feel good about it. It got us to where we are. And then the companies or maybe the managers or someone's kind of manipulating us in a negative way, maybe taking advantage a little bit. And I don't think, it doesn't sound like Brian's in that case, but I think it's something that folks should be cautious about. But just getting away from that mindset where you have to be productive all the time. And I think that's something you and I, Rusty, I mean, we're productive in our own ways and we're not specifically lazy in general, but I think you and I both have friends that are retired that continue to want to like push the limits of efficiency. They don't want to have waste in the system. I was listening to Chris Hutchins' podcast from All the Hacks, and he was talking about trying to find like the best flight, which that's his thing. But he talked about how he ended up spending probably a dozen hours over a month and a lot of mental bandwidth to try to save $400 basically. And it wasted a huge amount of time that he could have been doing something else. Maybe, I mean, spending time with family would be a perfect thing, but that sort of over-optimization / I'm a productive person, I need to be productive. And I've separated myself from that. Cause I mean, like we said, I used to work at a consulting company. I built a business, did really well. And then I was like, it's pretty cool to quiet quit on my own self-employment, which I literally did and shut it down. So do you have any thoughts on that? Just like, it seems innate, but I think it's more of a habit of being productive.
Yeah, I have quite a few thoughts on that topic. I guess one of my big ones is that I think there's a really important distinction between having your identity tied around your like quote unquote work ethic versus tied around intentionality. And what I'm trying to do with myself now is I think I work less hard, and I think I try to figure out ways to make even the things that I do, the productive things that I do, less work for me. But I try to spend a lot more time thinking about what's important to me, what I value, and making sure that my actions are consistent. Cause if you're just like plowing ahead 1,000 miles per hour, but you never take a second to like catch your breath, lift your head up and look around and make sure you're pointed in the direction you actually want to be heading, like hard work isn't a virtue.
Yeah.
Under those circumstances. And then I guess the other big point is, I think just like a little historical and cultural perspective is helpful, cause the US work culture today is huge anomaly. In the US, we work like almost double the amount of hours as the average German person. And Germany is known for being like this super productive economy. They're known for like, it's almost like a joke of like how efficient they are with things. And we're working double the amount of hours as them. So the idea that you can't take a little bit of, like, if you take your foot off the gas a little bit by American standards, that you're being unproductive, that means the entire country of Germany is unproductive, which is an absurd result. I think this is like a historical example that actually drives home a lot, even though it's specific to the legal industry. The big law firms used to be called white shoe law firms, or they're still called white shoe law firms. And the reason for that is they were based in New York City. And during the summer, all the partners would go up to the Adirondacks and they'd wear their white shoes, which was like their boat shoes, their leisure shoes for hanging out by the pool. And that was the whole idea, is like you worked hard to get to the level of partner so you could take the summers off. That was kind of the trade-off. And now the partners at a white shoe law firm, it'd be like a joke for them to take vacation. I had one of my peers who's a partner at one of the law firms that I worked at. He has a second home in Breckenridge. And I saw him last summer and I was like, oh, how are you going to be up here a lot? And he's like, my wife and kids are, I'm going to be mostly back at the office working. And I was just like, you've made a horrible fucking trade-off, man. Yeah. Like I stopped working before I got to your level. I had enough money to get the vacation home in Breckenridge. But the difference is like, I can actually be up here and your situation actually like sucks more because you got the vacation home and that means you don't see your wife and kids for the summer. Right. And you're just working at the office. And it's just like the work culture has changed so much so fast, just even in a couple generations. And I think part of it too is, part of it is there are big economic changes in the legal industry and now partners have to actually work more to make law firms work essentially. But another part of it is just like these fucking smartphones and emails, just it makes it impossible to ever disconnect. You know, it used to be some of the older attorneys at the law firm, they'd be like, oh, if you wanted to work at home, you had to like check out a laptop at the end of the day. And it was like a whole process. And it wasn't just assumed that you always had a laptop with you wherever you go. And now it is. I mean, even when I'm on vacation, I was like, I'd be like ocean kayaking on vacation. And I'd have a partner emailing me like, hey, I need to know where this document is immediately. So yeah, it's just like that is not something that would have ever happened 30 years ago. So
interesting. Man, I think we could do like a whole podcast.
That was a quiet quitting. That touched off something on me
when you
posted that one. So.
Well, and I noted an idea of like maybe like virtue and vices of Phi, which could be like a 10-part series or whatever. Because frugality, hard work, and like stuff switches between the two depending on where you're at. Okay. You have some great ones around the health and wellness in the office. Specifically, you know, where you can close the door. So I'll let you kind of quick hit through these and, you know, we'll have a little discussion, but you can move faster.
Yeah. I got to have my own private office for the duration of my legal career, 9+ years. So I actually did develop a good number of strategies for this. So the first one was yoga and mindfulness. I kept a yoga mat in my office. I would do simple poses. I do pigeon, cat, cow, child's pose, low lunges, things that would stretch out my hips and lower back, the parts of your body that get really tight from sitting all day. And then part of this and the part of being lazy was I would use it for meditation and naps as well. So that would be one that is, I think it's pretty critical to have the ability to close your door and have the privacy, because I think no matter how understanding your workplace is, there's still relatively few that would allow you to be taking naps at work without it raising some eyebrows. And then I did some low impact movement and just had a Bluetooth headset, and then I put a little toy basketball hoop on my back door and I got like a foam ball that was totally quiet. And so I would just be shooting hoops while I'd be on phone calls. Sometimes when I was talking, because I got pretty used to it. And I was actually surprised because it's a good amount of movement, because the ball would, you know, fall to different parts. It'd roll under the desk, it'd roll under a chair. You'd have to like get up and down to get it. So I was like actually pretty happy with the level of activity that it provided. I would do some body weight exercises. So just like 2 minutes of air squats, lunges, jumping jacks, especially after lunch, that I felt like that like could significantly improve metabolic health and give me better energy levels, prevent a potential like crash in the afternoon. And then I would utilize the building. I'd go for, I just take the stairs instead of the elevator. That's one that no one like even raises an eyebrow. If you're doing that, and people, I think most of the time are like, oh, I should be doing that more too. So that one was pretty good. And then calendar blocking is one that my wife used. She would block off times to go on walks with friends. She was working in Willis Tower. There's like 20,000 employees there any day. So we actually had just like legitimate friends, not just like work. Yeah. She had legitimate friends, not just work acquaintances there. So set up a time to like get together with them and go for an actual, just like leisurely walk. Wouldn't be talking about work or anything like that. And especially with her schedule, she'd be in meetings pretty much all day. So she would just set aside an hour meeting. And with that schedule, with that meeting schedule too, no one really raised an eyebrow if she wasn't in her office for that time. Just assume she was at a meeting.
And you could label it as something that sounds productive.
Yeah.
So that's obviously, you know, sometimes the calendars are accessible by your management or whatever. So you can name it something like strategic meeting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then I guess the last one, this is a little bit of a blend of the creating boundaries and prioritizing health. But I did Invisalign my last couple of years of work. And that's like a lot of appointments because you end up going to the dentist. I mean, I think like less than every 2 months. And I think there was an old version of me that had been like scheduling those at whatever, 8 a.m., trying to get them in before the work day, or at 5 p.m., trying to do them after. And I was like, this is ridiculous. This is for my medical care. There were big medical benefits for me to do the Invisalign. I just would schedule them during the workday, and I would go to the dentist during the workday. And then I was doing my last 2 years, I was doing my psychotherapy, and I just scheduled that during the workday too. I was like, my therapist doesn't like to work past 5. I was like, I'll schedule this for 4. I'll leave at 3:30, and that'll be the end of my day. And I was doing that every week for a while, and then every 2 weeks. But drawing those boundaries helped a lot, because I was like, no, I truly am prioritizing myself. I'm giving myself a little bit of space to exist.
Yeah. Nice. And I'll throw one in here. Just, I know something that Carl has been experimenting with, of course, still friend of the show, but perfect for office workouts. That's a shake weight. The guy has been, if you see him around and he's in better shape, shake weights. The guy always has one or two in his hands. It's crazy.
Yeah. His forearms are really popping. Just super, super vascular, veiny forearms now. So
it's amazing. Yeah. Really definitely crazy. Ask him about it. If you see him, ask Carl about his shake weights. He loves it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we covered almost everything on our list here. Brian, thanks for sending the email. If people have other thoughts or questions around quiet quitting or doing less work at work, it's a fun topic to dig into. So if you have specific questions, we are trying to get some voicemails in. So you can record like a voice memo, just email it to me. There's some stuff in the show notes, so you should be able to find it. But yeah, I love the topic. It's so fun.
Yeah. So, and it was so fun that people latched onto it. And I really like that irony of this is a career podcast about where we go through strategies about how to do less at work.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thanks, Rusty. It's always fun. You'll be back in the studio soon. So really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast. And I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. One of the great hobbies that we share is cooking and eating and food. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, this is our latest installment of the Mile High Fi Good Eats Club.
Yes.
I think.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we've had the baby, obviously. So this is the first time I've ever really intentionally created like a bulked up freezer stash. So thought I'd talk about maybe a couple of the items that were, I thought, good experiments that were particularly successful. So with the baby, yeah, we kind of need things you can just grab out of the freezer, put in the microwave for like a minute and have them ready to eat. So we did some soups. We did some frozen breakfast burritos, which were pretty good. And then a couple of newer recipes for us was we did egg bites for the first time, put those in the muffin tins.
Oh, yeah,
and yeah. I even ordered an extra muffin tin. So we had like, we can make 36 at a time, which is over a week's worth of breakfast for the whole family. And so we did those and we did almond flour, blueberry muffins. So yeah, the egg bites we do put about like pretty much fill up the blender with eggs, cottage cheese, cheddar cheese, some breakfasty herbs, some paprika, some sage, and then put some breakfast sausage, crumbled up breakfast sausage on the bottom, some spinach on top of that, and then cover them with the eggs. And then they reheat super well. That was a super successful experiment. Yeah. And then the almond flour muffins they're muffins, but the almond flour really changes the like healthiness of them. And then, you know, you get a whole package of blueberries in there. So we'd make 30, I was making 36 muffins and 36 egg bites at a time. I don't know. And that sort of batch cooking isn't something I'd really done before. And it definitely takes some of the fun out of it.
Okay.
But it was a means to an end to get healthy food on a more regular basis and to have things that you could literally just grab out of the freezer and heat up in the microwave. Yeah. Have you done much batch cooking before?
Quite a bit. And I think, yeah, to your point, you end up with like every single bowl dirty kind of thing. So yeah, the overhead, it's like you get so much done and it buys you free time in the future. But at the same time, you have so many more things to prep, you know, if you're just making whatever one batch of the muffins, and I'm just making up some example. It's like, all right, you have to chop half an onion. If you're doing a big batch, you're like, all right, I have to chop four onions. And then you need like a place to put all those chopped up onions. And then, so all of a sudden, yeah, I use like every bowl and Elizabeth walks into the kitchen and it's just like filled up. It looks like someone cooked food for 40 people or whatever, which is kind of what you're doing.
And you need a chunk of time too. And then if you get like even a little distracted, you're like, I could mess up 36 muffins. Like, you know, a week's worth of food could be messed up right now. Yeah. So then it's like every little distraction from the kids is like extra, makes it extra tense.
Oh, yeah.
There was one day too, I forgot the salt. And so I was like, oh, we had everything done. And I was like, well, we're going to have to eat these, but they're going to taste way more bland because, you know, I got distracted right at that moment when it was time to add salt. So
Yeah, easy to make mistakes. And then you're probably, are you generally winging it or do you have like a checklist at least so you remember what you put in and not put in?
I don't keep a checklist, but I'll pull up, especially for the muffins, I'll pull up a recipe. Okay. And then, yeah, for the egg bites, it's a little bit more of a, you know, winging type scenario, but they're very forgiving. And I do find that if you salt them, put them in the blender to scramble them, like they retain their moisture super well. Kenji Lopez Alt, he did an episode just online of the science of how salting your eggs like changes their moisture content greatly.
Yeah.
And so if you can just even get the eggs 15 minutes of contact with the salt before you cook them, they just really cling on to the moisture. That's one of the reasons why I think they reheated so well in the microwave. So
you're only doing things that are shaped like muffins
Well, I found the muffins just ended up being super, super convenient. But I was like, oh, this is, it's perfect. You think of the muffin sized, it's like, But now our baby is 17 weeks old. So I'm eating less things in muffin form than I was there for a few months.
It's like the muffin quarter. You know, everything right. was muffin
everything
form.
Muffin.
Which I've been doing pizza. So you and I had pizza like a few weeks or months, I don't remember. And then I went with my brother-in-law for like a pizza walkabout here in Longmont, which was awesome. And I've just been thinking more about pizza and eating more. And I got a pizza steal, which we spoke about sometime. I don't even remember if we were recording or not, but I got the pizza steel and it's awesome. It's thick, it's heavy, it can live in the oven. Like, we figured out that it's okay. The first time Elizabeth used the oven though, she did pick it up and move it, which was okay. I mean, it's bulky and awkward and it weighs like about 30 pounds, but she's strong. So she was able to move it and just set it on the stove there. That said, it is warming up here in Colorado, so it's often 90 plus degrees. When you cook pizza, you usually, especially with a steel, you turn on the oven as high as it'll go, and you let it heat up for an hour, which is a really dumb thing to do in the middle of the summer if you don't want it to be that warm. So all that said, I've used it a couple times. It performed well. I've been working on my dough, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But I also have a charcoal kettle grill that has like a pizza stone set up, which I have an extra stone for you. So I need to remember, it's all packed up with your name on it and everything. In the heat, I was like, you know what? I'm going to light the charcoal grill and do it out there and see if I, even though there's a little bit of, there's more effort to cook outside, there's more effort to like light the charcoal and all that. Like, is it worth the payoff of like doing all that? It is. Like, absolutely. It's much hotter. Yeah. And it turned out great. So I only did one pizza out there, just the amount of dough that I had and the way I do it. But it worked out great. And I was like, yeah, this is way better than like letting the house temperature go up by 8 degrees because you have the oven on cranked for way too long.
Keeping the oven on for that long, I've noticed too, because I was making the soups to put into the freezer. If you make a soup, you have the burner running for like an hour, 90 minutes, and then you have the humidity from the evaporated water coming up. And I was like, now my house is like 2 degrees warmer and 10% more humid. Like, this is, you know, this is unpleasant, especially when it's so hot outside. You kind of want to be able to come inside and cool off.
And that's why the basement is magic down here. It's like 10 degrees cooler. Yeah. You had to wear your...
I put a flannel on to come in down here today. Yeah, got my shorts and t-shirt otherwise.
And I'll wrap it quick because I could talk about this stuff all day long. So the other thing is I started working a little bit harder on the dough. And one thing, probably when we talked last, I was like, I roughly wing it. I've made pizza dough before and I've made bread before. So I kind of know what it should look like and I roughly measure, but then I end up just kind of dialing it in, which is not very consistent. I am good at being consistent if I want to. Like, I used to brew beer a lot. I can keep meticulous notes, which I started doing, and I'm doing like a long cold ferment in the refrigerator. So it's like a 3-day ferment up to maybe 7 days because I'm not making all the dough all at once. Mm-hmm. But it turns out great and I am dialing it in. It's roughly like a New York style pizza dough. So I think I'm doing like maybe 350 gram balls. And then I think I'm probably making them like 12 or 14 inches, but the long ferment like really improves the flavor. And I'm using like some 00 flour with some bread flour and some sourdough starter. So I'm dialing it in and it makes a huge difference and I can tell already.
That's like a real professional operation you got going on, Doug. So yeah.
Thanks. I am good at planning ahead. So like a lot of times people are like, I want to make pizza like in a few hours. And I'm like, I'm planning like a week ahead. Yeah. So just have the dough in there. It'll be ready when you want it. And it held up for like the week. It was totally fine. The gluten, I mean, it just, It was awesome. It tastes so good.
But you can go walk all these places in Longmont and have amazing pizza too. And true. Yeah. But yeah. I find that I'm the same way though, because I'm like, I love pizza so much. And then it's like the more that I eat it, the more I just want to be eating it. So it's not like you're not getting out to the places that are awesome here. You're just getting those places plus having awesome pizza at home too. And
funny enough, I'm 99% sure I'm going to have pizza tonight. Nice. Probably Domino's, right? I'm a trashy, just normal I'm probably going to get Domino's. However, I've been thinking about pizza, knowing that we were going to talk about it. And I will highly recommend Rosalie's, because you haven't been to Rosalie's in a while.
I haven't been in a while.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. As long as you, because if you would want pizza, because now we're talking about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I'll eat pizza all day long. Yeah. So unhealthy.